Earth. Milwaukee begins a four-game series tonight in Cincinnati. Elsewhere, the Cubs beat Miami 4-3. Cleveland beat the White Sox 8-2. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service. Sunny today, a high of 62. There is a moderate to high swim risk in Lake Michigan today due to life-threatening waves and currents. Partly cloudy tonight, a low of 44. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, a high of 63. The five-day weather trend, slight rain chances are in the forecast Saturday through Monday. Temperatures will stay on the cool side at least through the middle of next week. Right now, 53, I'm David Cole, WGTD News. The morning show with Greg Berg is coming up. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm really excited to be spending today's morning show, at least most of it, with Dr. Joseph Benson, who is Associate Professor of Literatures and Languages at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, and more to the point, coordinator of UW-Parkside's Foreign Language Series for so many years, nearly four decades, a beautiful jewel in the crown of the cultural landscape of southeastern Wisconsin. And it's been for the last couple of years, I think, that Professor Benson has been the co-coordinator of the Foreign Film Series with Norm Coulthier, who has finally stepped down, and people are sad to see him step down from this position, which he has done such a great job with over these last 39 years. But this current season of foreign films have been, in a sense, co-coordinated by Norm Coulthier and by Professor Benson. And we're going to be talking about that partnership and what's going to be happening going forward from here. But mostly we're going to be talking about this marvelous array of foreign films. 14 in all, were you saying?
Yes.
14 in all. The first already aired last week. That was the award-winning Drive My Car. And so we're going to be talking about all the films that remain that will be running from this weekend all the way through the middle of April. And we'll also talk about the fact that this entire season, unlike last season, is entirely in the Parkside Cinema. So these wonderful foreign films can be enjoyed on the big screen where they always were intended to be. Professor Joseph Benson, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Glad that we can have this conversation. I think we should probably not go any further without talking about your distinguished colleague who has just stepped down after 39 years of carefully cultivating and guiding this foreign film series with such distinction. Tell us, first of all, about your first encounter with Norm Coutier and how you came to be involved in this foreign film series.
Sure. It's kind of an interesting story. There was a position that opened at Parkside in my, it must have been my third or fourth year teaching. I've been there 10 years now. And it was for the athletic director, a kind of liaison position between athletics at Parkside and faculty. And Norm held that position for a number of years, and he was stepping away from that position to do other things. And there was kind of an open call for people, other professors, to apply for that position. So I applied, and Norm interviewed me for this, it's called the FAR, faculty, I can't think of the acronym, but this faculty athletics position. I did not get that job. Norm did not hire me for that job, which is kind of funny. But he liked me enough that a week later, he contacted me and he said, "Hey, I think, you know, you'd be perfect to help me out with the foreign film series." And I think probably Norm at that point realized that he was at the tail end of his career, and I think that he wanted to maybe groom somebody to take over the foreign film series, although I don't think that I realized that at the time. But yeah, that was about 4 or 5 years ago, and since then we've been working together and selecting the films, and I ran a discussion group after a lot of the films for several years, and yeah, pretty much working together ever since. And then Norm retired a couple of years ago, but kind of held on to the position of foreign film series director, and then finally just recently stepped down completely and allowed me to take over the directorship.
I find it really intriguing that in an interview about this position involving athletics,
yeah,
that somehow something would have come up in the course of that conversation that would have sparked this idea in his head that, oh, here's my guy to help with the foreign film series.
Yeah, you know, Obviously, Norm is an economist. He was an economics professor, and if folks don't know that, but one of his sort of foci was sports economics. So he really focused on kind of the economy of sports in the U.S. And so, but he also has this love of literature or of film, for film and literature. And I'm a big sports fan too. And I'm also, you know, obviously a literature professor. So I think that maybe he saw in me a bit of a kindred spirit, you know, somebody who, you know, has kind of what may seem like disparate interests, but actually we were similar in that. So maybe that was it. I'm not sure though.
So there were at least a couple of seasons where the two of you chose films together, including this current season. Tell us a little bit about that process by which the two of you would put together these films. I mean, that you would actually select them. What did that process sort of look like and feel like?
Sure. Yeah. So prior to me coming aboard for, you know, probably three decades, Norm worked with another professor who was also an English professor. And actually, in retrospect, maybe Norm was looking for an English professor because that's who had worked with him in the past. But unfortunately, that gentleman died, actually. So they basically had a partnership where, and this is what Norm and I kind of mirrored after that, where basically Norm said, come up with about 30 films, and I'll come up with about 30 films, and we will compare. And that's what we did. And Norm was much more meticulous in his research and really digging for films. I tended to go online and look at different best of lists from really great cinema magazines like Film Comment and Cineast and IndieWire and places like that. And of course, I would draw from the Academy Award nominations and the Golden Globe nominations and like I said, lots of best of lists. I have no idea how Norm came up with his. I think his was a little bit more mysterious where he found his films. But we would compare notes and we would get together and we would, you know, look at all, you know, 60 or so films on the overhead. You know, Norm sort of has had his finger on the pulse of what the patrons wanted and liked historically and what historically maybe folks wouldn't respond well to types of movies. So, you know, Norm was always, you know, very interested in having as many comedies as possible. He didn't want a lot of really, really dark, violent, depressing films because he knows that in the past patrons would respond like, you know, can we get something a little bit more lighthearted? You know, so that was a very, very much a concern for him. We thought a lot about representation. We wanted a wide breadth of voices in countries represented, breadth of, you know, women directors, men directors. And then we would kind of just weed out the films. And then as the years went by and, you know, the streaming on the Netflix streaming in these different streaming studios, films became very, very difficult for us to get the rights to for those types of films. So that was important, too. For example, any Netflix film is almost impossible for us to screen because it's very difficult, if not impossible, to get those screening rights.
So things that you mean are produced by Netflix or even that are shown on Netflix, it's like they lock up the rights and they just you just can't get at a film like that. Is that what you're saying?
Produced. Netflix produced films, which are more and more popular and common and big films, you know, those are very difficult to get the rights to. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that factored in our choices as well. Then the final, we would come up with about 30 films, and then we would send those out, a list of those out to the patrons, and they would vote. Wow. And they would vote which ones they wanted to see, and then we would try to select around 14 or so based on vote-getters and based on whether we could get the rights. And that's kind of how it went down.
Interesting. Just in general, and you've already mentioned the Netflix thing, but aside from that, how tricky a matter is it in terms of securing rights? And are we talking about plunking down a fairly significant amount of money just to secure the rights to be able to show these films? And is it also a tricky matter in terms of just even figuring out who to contact? Or is that kind of information maybe more readily available than we might assume it is?
Well, you know, Norm did a great job in establishing relationships with a lot of different distributors over the years. And so I have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of emails in a email folder where Norm just simply CC'd me on the email. And that is what I draw from to find the contacts. And I mean, that figures very prominently in our selections. For example, 9 of the 14 films are distributed by a company called Swank, and those happened to be in the top 15 vote getters from the patrons, and I knew that contact person contacted that, you know, them. And films can range, so six showings a pop could range anywhere from $300 to $1,000 for the rights. And then we either, you know, procure the DVD or Blu-ray, or they send us that. This was changed when originally it was shown from 35 millimeter, you know, and they switched to Blu-ray and DVD. Pretty soon we're going to have to switch again to streaming because you know, folks aren't even going to have DVD and Blu-ray discs for us to have. So, you know, luckily, Norm left me with a lot of great you know, information with regard to who to contact and stuff like that. But no, that can be hugely problematic for a film that we want to show. If we can't find the person to contact and we can't get the rights to it, then we can't show it.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with Dr. Joseph Benson, who is a associate professor of literatures and languages at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, and also now coordinator of the foreign film series at Parkside. And we're about to begin talking about this succession of wonderful foreign films, one after another, that are going to be shown essentially now all the way through the middle of April. The season has already begun with Drive My Car, an Oscar-winning film. Mighty fine way to kick off this this current season. Before we start talking specifically, when it comes to finding kind of a balance, I suppose one of the things you want to do is make sure we're not seeing seven Korean films and five from Britain or whatever. I mean, you really want us to get a sense of the whole globe, and yet at the same time, you really want all of these to be really, really first-rate films.
Right, and that can be really challenging. Certainly, it depends on the year. It depends on the films that are available year to year. Ideally, we totally cover the globe, and that's something that I want to really focus on going forward as my sort of tenure takes place as the directorship. I really want to call on other faculty at Parkside for suggestions for films that I may not be aware of to really try to ensure representation. But yeah, there's a lot of challenges with regard to, you know, getting the rights to the films, making sure that if there aren't films available from, you know, parts of the world, then, you know, year to year, you just never know. Obviously we have to get the rights, and, you know, Norm always put the patrons first. Norm did. You know, I think that he looked at the foreign film series as a product, and the reason why it was so successful for four decades and has been is because the patrons come back year to year. You know, Norm never had an agenda with regard to that. His only agenda was offering great films that the patrons would love and that would keep them coming back. You know, as an economist, I think that was what was most important. I think had he had some kind of, agenda or that he was, thought that he was somehow providing some kind of education purpose or had some kind of agenda, they would have smelled that out.
Right.
I wouldn't like that. So we need to really balance finding great films, representation, in providing a good product that folks will want to come back for.
What, in general, we're talking about relatively recent films. Do you have a real kind of strict benchmark in terms of wanting films that are relatively current versus some classic Japanese film from 1948 that just suddenly is finally available? I mean, how far back do you ever go with the foreign film series?
Well, you know, Norm kind of set the precedent, and I really try to kind of, you know, mimic what he has done. And typically, the films will go back just a couple of years, but he has picked older films to show. For example, I think he showed Godard's Breathless at one point, and maybe Truffaut's 400 Blows, one of those two, I think. So maybe some classic films. I remember in the last 5 years that just for kicks, he would kind of pull out an oldie but a goodie. But generally speaking, by and large, these films are either, you know, just the previous years or maybe 2 years back. Mm.
So as we just said, the series began last week with the Oscar-winning film Drive My Car. Coming up this weekend is a film from Korea called Minari, which evidently tackles the really important and timely topic of cultural assimilation, what it means to assimilate oneself into another culture and country. Tell us more about Minari.
Yeah, this is another well-received film, highly acclaimed, 6 Academy Award nomination. It won the Golden Globe from director Lee Isaac Chung. And it's kind of described at, well, first of all, it, you know, takes place in the U.S., which is kind of ironic, but it's about a Korean family moving from California to Arkansas and trying to assimilate. I grew up, spent a lot of time in Springfield, Missouri, just north of Arkansas. So if anybody hasn't been to Arkansas, it would be a cultural shock for a lot of people, let alone a Korean family. But it's described as a kind of Flannery O'Connor-esque look at immigrants assimilating into the U.S. If you're not familiar with Flannery O'Connor's work, she's a great female writer, wrote about the Southern U.S., often described as a sort of Southern Gothic convention. She was the first woman to graduate from the Iowa Writers' Workshop, but great writer. And so it's this kind of a fish out of water story about a Korean family trying to make their way in rural Arkansas. And so it kind of interrogates the American dream and, who the American dream actually is available for. A lot of these films really interrogate important cultural topics in often very strange and different and unusual ways. But this one, highly acclaimed. I don't want to give too much away. Going to be a good one.
And I think what would be really intriguing is, one can well imagine, and certainly films have been made here in America about this experience, but in a sense, it would be American filmmakers telling this story to at least some extent through an American lens, even if they bent over backwards to try to make it sensitive to these, whoever is come from wherever they've come from. But this is telling this story through the lens of the people who have come here.
Exactly.
I mean, and with their own understanding, that does sound exceptionally interesting. Minari, which that's tonight already that it
right.
That
yep. opens. Tonight, so. And I'll be there welcoming patrons. I wasn't available last weekend because I was in Columbus, Ohio for my birthday, but I will be welcoming all the patrons this weekend. So.
Very good. And so there's screenings tonight and then also tomorrow night and Saturday night.
Yeah, one tonight, one tomorrow night, two Saturday, two Sunday.
Very good. In the Parkside Cinema. Then coming up on the 6th of October, this would be, I'm sure, one of the headliners of the season because a lot of people have heard of the film Belfast. And explain the connection between this film and Kenneth Branagh, a name that many people know.
Yeah, Kenneth Branagh. I always thought of him as the Shakespeare guy, right? He's a wonderful director, Irish director, who for many years would make films based on Shakespeare plays. He did a wonderful version of Hamlet and other great Shakespeare plays. Made films of those. Finally did a much more personal film about growing up in Belfast during what's called the Troubles and the war-torn Northern Ireland and a lot of the stuff that went down there primarily in the 60s. And it's from the point of view of a child sort of trying to understand, in the middle of this unrest in Northern Ireland, which was very kind of local in a lot of ways, based on religion and loyalties. I think that we think of like a lot of kind of urban violence and car bombs and things like that that went down in Northern Ireland. But it's from the point of view of a child and clearly autobiographical sort of a child being in the middle of this and kind of not understanding it. It's kind of this situational irony, whereas viewers, as consumers of the film, we realize what's going on, but the main character, this child, who's clearly Kenneth Branagh as a child, doesn't really understand. So it's very poignant and funny. And what's odd about these films is when you try to pin down the genre. Is this a comedy? Is this a drama? More and more, you see the blending of genres where you have elements of drama, but also comedic elements and elements of love stories. And this is no different. Very, very funny, poignant moments, but also full of high drama as well.
Very good. Belfast, opening October 6th. Then there's a film from a very different part of the world called Lunana. And tell us where this film comes from.
Bhutan, yeah. This kind of remote place in South Asia, a Buddhist country. And this is a film directed by Paolo Choining Dorje, also an Academy Award nominee. And this follows a protagonist who, kind of by writ of the government, has to essentially provide a certain kind of national service and must go teach in this very remote village. This film is kind of close to my heart because it's all about the wonders of teaching and the challenges and difficulties therein. But this teacher, you know, has to go kind of serve the country and teach for a period of time in this very remote area, has very little resources, and at first finds himself very dejected and wanting to quit, but then sort of becomes much more resourceful, as many teachers around the U.S. must do, and figures out a way. Mm. And it's a very uplifting film, like I said, about the highs and lows of teaching, I will say.
I love that. One I will have to seek out. And I'm intrigued also about the French film, which follows thereafter in early November.
Yeah, Two of Us, French film, Philippe Minghetti. This film was shortlisted for the Academy Award, wasn't ultimately nominated, but this is a really interesting film about two women who are lifelong partners, who are in fact in homosexual women, lovers, partners, but who aren't really out in the community.
Right.
And which is a really kind of an interesting topic and kind of really interrogates sexual stereotypes and, notions of love and definitions of love and partnership. But it is, in a strange way, a coming out narrative. And like I said, really kind of interrogates images of love and sexuality. Another important film. I don't want to give away the hook in the film, but there is something very, very sad, very touching, and very kind of terrible, but ultimately endearing that happens in the film to this couple.
It's already intriguing, so even without giving too much away. Certainly the most eye-catching title of all of these films is the next one, a film that comes from Romania, opening on November 17th.
Yes. Now, this is a comedy. Like a lot of these films have comedic elements. Bad Luck Banging or Loony Porn, very kind of intriguing title. But Radu Jude, this is a Romanian film. And the premise to this film is that a teacher in a kind of a smaller community in Romania creates a sex tape with her husband that is inadvertently uploaded to the internet and accessed by people in the community who are, some are aghast and horrified, some perhaps titillated, who knows, but essentially the woman catches heck for it, is nearly fired from her job. And this really kind of explores sexism in this kind of very conservative town. Also, the sort of the dangers of the internet, I will say. And also, this takes place during COVID, during the height of COVID. So it's this kind of comedic, absurdist film about this woman who finds herself in this very terrible situation and is confronted by a community that wants to essentially, you know, crucify her for this sex tape that is released, and she sort of has to fight for her job going forward, and it all takes place during COVID. Yeah, so interesting.
Great story. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. A lot behind that intriguing title.
Right.
I recognize the title of this next in part because there are a couple of classical music works with the name Undine, U-N-D-I-N-E, a film from Germany opening on December 1st.
Yeah, Christian Petzl, director of this film, and this is another film that kind of defies genre in many ways. On one level, it's a romantic comedy, and on another level, it's a sort of a supernatural film. But it's a kind of a take on this old German folk tale about a water nymph. With the name of the same title, Undine, and which if you're not familiar with the folk tale, it's about a water nymph who basically has this idea where if a man breaks up with her, she must kill him, and so this plays out in a kind of contemporary context. I won't give any away, but it's a sort of the blending of this folk tale in a contemporary context, sort of implanted in the genre of a romantic comedy.
Mm.
But huge elements of the supernatural, I will say.
Right. Very good. A mystery from Denmark comes up a little bit later called Riders of Justice.
Yeah, this is a really interesting film from Anders Thomas Jensen, also a kind of genre-bending film that is compared to the Coen brothers. If anybody is familiar with the great Coen brothers films, where they oftentimes sort of blend genres and elements of drama and comedy and very, very strange characters and sort of David Lynchian. This is a somewhat of a murder mystery about a man whose wife is killed on a train, but there's actually a survivor of the train who tells the man that there might have been foul play involved, and he basically sets out to try to find out how his wife was killed. What I'll say about this film is this notion of a reference to the Coen brothers. If anybody who is familiar with that filmmaking team will know right away what to expect here.
Well said. Another timely film coming up, and this one from Britain called Limbo. A very apt title since this film involves the experience of refugees.
Yeah, this is from Ben Chirac, I think is how you pronounce that. But another kind of, again, I hesitate to call it a comedy because it's a very, very serious topic, but there are comedic elements involved. Comedic elements, if you think Kafka's funny, which I sometimes do.
Sure.
But it's funny in a very kind of almost brutal way. Almost, Kafka, in his own way, almost beats you over the head with his with his humor. But this looks at the Syrian refugee crisis, and particularly the men who have to sort of live, carry on and live, and kind of the absurdities that happen. Living in hostels, not being able to work, being told how to act. And it's kind of an existentialist Kafkaesque look at a sort of a crisis of masculinity that happens to a lot of these men who must kind of, reinvent themselves in a foreign country, and the difficulties in that, and the bureaucratic challenges, and the kind of absurdities that happen in trying to figure out how to carry on.
Hmm. Well, as someone who's 50% Norwegian, I'm especially interested in the film that opens in early February from Norway. Although now I can't read my handwriting in terms of the title that I wrote down. Something about the world.
The worst person in the world.
The worst person in the world, yes.
Yeah. And you know, Greg, I didn't realize this, but I'm also 50% Norwegian.
Oh, well, no wonder we get along. So.
My dad's 100%, yeah. So, yeah, really interesting. Another sort of comedic film. This one, this was an Academy Award-nominated film from Norway, Joakim Trier. Another kind of romantic comedy. This one really reminds me of Woody Allen, Woody Allen films. And it follows a female protagonist and her dating life. I will say that, and how she sort of navigates dating in the contemporary world in Norway, kind of the ups and downs and pitfalls of the modern woman as she sort of navigates the perilous world of dating in the contemporary world. But yeah, I will say it reminds me a lot of particularly Annie Hall, for example. If anybody's familiar with Annie Hall and the different kinds of things that Woody Allen does in that film, short bursts of animation, different kind of sort of breaking the third wall, talking about sort of urban dating life. So that's how I would describe that, yeah.
Interesting. Very good. Then a film that comes from France that I think, from what I can tell, would especially appeal to anybody who considers themselves kind of a film connoisseur, and in particular anybody who is familiar with the amazing legacy of Ingmar Bergman.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and interesting we just mentioned Woody Allen, because Woody Allen's probably greatest influence was Ingmar Bergman, the great Swedish filmmaker, Seventh Seal and Scenes from a Marriage and others. But yeah, this is out of France, Mia Hansen-Love, director, and a very kind of meta look at a film about filmmaking and about the influence anxiety of influence. But yeah, looks at a couple who are themselves filmmakers who travel to Bergman's home and, sleep in his the bed that he used in the great film Scenes from a Marriage. It has the popular actor Tim Roth, who's in Tarantino's Pulp Fiction, if you're familiar with him as a character. But, sort of looks at, a film about filmmaking, the influence of filmmaking, and really kind of a meditation on Ingmar Bergman and his legacy, exactly.
Very good. Fascinating idea for a film. Then a film that comes from Russia.
Yeah, this is Juho Kuosmanen, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And this was shortlisted for the Academy Award, premiered at Cannes. And this is an interesting film, kind of a travel film, I would say, or almost sort of a buddy movie, travel narrative about two unlikely characters. One, a student who is going on a research exhibition to look at petroglyphs, which are carvings, essentially. And this character meets up with a kind of a Russian blue-collar kind of man, and they strike up an unusual friendship, relationship, though nothing sort of romantic about it. But the film, it sort of interrogates class and contemporary Russia. So interesting in that sense, for sure.
Very good. And I'm very, very intrigued, exceptionally so, by the film from Spain that will be opening on March 30th, one called Parallel Mothers.
Right. This is another one where I don't want to give too much away, because there is actually a very interesting twist here. But this is from the great Spanish director Pedro Almodovar, who has won Academy Awards at least two in the past. But this stars the great Penelope Cruz, who most people probably are aware of, has been in lots of American films, Vanilla Sky and another one that took place in Spain, a Woody Allen film. I can't think of the title right now. But yeah, this looks at Penelope Cruz, who plays a woman nearing 40 who gets pregnant and decides to have the child and raise it on her own. And at the same time, when she's giving birth, there is a much younger woman who is also giving birth and who is planning to raise the child on her own as well. And they sort of strike up a relationship and keep in touch, and some very bizarre, strange things happen with regard to their children and their relationship as the film unfolds. But yeah, one of the real jewels, I think, in the lineup is this one for sure.
And I'm really glad that the final film is a documentary film. And I know from time to time that occurs, and there are wonderful documentary films that are made. And this one from Italy, called The Truffle Hunters, sounds like something that's great fun and really interesting.
Yeah, this is from director Michael Dweck, and this is another film that is kind of funny in a way, but also sort of bittersweet. And it looks like it looks at the industry of truffles. And this is the truffles, of course, are a sort of fungi, a delicacy that great chefs around the world value and covet, but they're very rare and hard to find. But there are truffle hunters who they essentially have a career. That's how they make their livelihood, hunting these truffles. And there are these in this kind of remote part of the world. They seek out and find these mushrooms, and they're it covers the older men who are kind of bitter about the industry and how it's changed, and how sort of younger hunters use technology and these kinds of things to hunt their truffles. But these older folks just rely on their own grit and knowledge to find the truffle. So, you know, it's about the generational divide in many ways, and technology and how the world is changing, and how these older truffle hunters are sticking to their older ways.
Love it. What a great idea. So there you have it, with these 14 films that are that comprise the current season of the Foreign Film Series at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. I know that it's a ridiculous bargain when you buy a season ticket. It covers all of the films. And even though the first film is already done, is it still possible to buy a season ticket? I mean, because it's still a ridiculous bargain.
Absolutely. $30 for 14 films, now 13. You can certainly go online at UWP Foreign Film Series and purchase your season ticket, or you can just come tonight and get an order form, and we'll go ahead and let you in free. And as long as you fill out the order form at some point, we'll trust you. But you come to the door, we'll get you an order form, or go online and purchase your season ticket. No problem.
Very good. And I understand that you are also, in a sense, taking donations or contributions to help underwrite the costs of this.
Certainly. And over the last 2 years, boy, we sure took a hit because we, provided, 2 years ago in 2020, our whole season was online, and we did not charge anything for the films that we often pay anywhere from $300 to $1,000 per film. And then last year, half of the films were also streamed, and half were in the cinema. And so we took a huge hit financially. So yeah, we would love some donations to get us back on firm financial ground going forward. But nevertheless, we'll keep trucking.
Here's a last question for you. I don't remember from our previous conversations where your own love of foreign films comes from. And I'm curious, is this something that dates early on? I mean, way back when you were tearing up the diamond as a baseball star? Were you already kind of intrigued by foreign films, or is this something you've come to a little bit later in life and for any particular reason?
Yeah, my dad is a retired English teacher and taught high school English for 30 years, and then taught at the community college level. And so I got into reading literature and writing at a very early age, and just falling in love with stories in general. And I never really fully distinguished that much between literature and film. And I just am a lover of great stories, and reading and consuming great stories and telling great stories. And really got into actually filmmaking about 2 or 3 years ago, as our a DMAP, Digital Media and Production Program, developed at UW Parkside. I started getting into making films as well. So always been a lover of films, have been making some smaller films myself over the last few years. And it seemed like a no-brainer when Norm asked me to help him out. And it really sort of a gift that he gave me as he retired. So, I was thrilled to do it, and am thrilled to do it.
And I think it's important for us to underscore for anybody who has not ever attended any of these foreign films at Parkside, or certainly have not been a season ticket holder, that this involves a different kind of experience than what so many people increasingly do, which is sit at home in the privacy of their living room and click through this and click through that. I mean, it's a very different experience to go to a cinema with other people and sit there and experience a film together. And I think that's especially true with the foreign film series, because it is, in a sense, a community of film lovers, many of whom show up again and again and again. And so you will see a lot of familiar faces and really enjoy a very special sense of community that is probably even more so than the typical trip you take to the local cinema.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. I think that there's a very special collective experience that only happens in films that you are watching with a community of people and strangers. Particularly in relation to watching a foreign film, which by definition is probably telling a story that is new to you, or at least depicting people with whom you are not familiar. So it's a wonderful experience to touch base with other cultures, other people, get you out of the house, broaden your horizons, and really sort of make you a more well-rounded, culturally aware person.
Very well said. So we hope that if you are intrigued by anything that you've heard today, that you will further explore the foreign film series at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, or better yet, subscribe. And you can go to uwp.edu, type foreign film series into the search bar, and you can revisit the whole series of films, which again began screening last week with Drive My Car, and all the rest of the films screen now through the middle of April with Minari from Korea filming a screening tonight, tomorrow, and over the rest of the weekend. And Dr. Joseph Benson at the helm, coordinating the foreign film series this year. Professor Benson, great to talk with you today on The Morning Show. Thank you for making time for this conversation, and best wishes as you go forward to coordinating a film series in future years.
Thank you. Always great to be here.
By the way, we look forward to a visit from the Chancellor of the University of Wisconsin Parkside, Dr. Deborah Ford, next Tuesday. Tomorrow on the morning show, we're focused on Carthage College and homecoming weekend, and in particular, the exciting homecoming concert that is going to be presented to the public Saturday night. That concert will be the first opportunity the public has to experience the work of the new conductor of the Carthage Choir, Dr. Maggie Burke. She'll be joining us along with Dr. Peter Dene, who conducts the Treble Chorale, which celebrates its 40th anniversary this year, and Dr. James Ripley, who is the coordinator or director of instrumental activities at Carthage. And we'll be finding out about all that's going on musically at Carthage.